Good morning. I'm Pat Thurston. Last hour here together with you this morning, but it's an important hour. And I want to talk about this event that is happening. I had no idea that this was going on, and yet it's huge. It seems to be going on around the world. And so joining us right now, we have Chris Wells. Chris Wells is the U.S. spokesman for the World March for Peace and Nonviolence, and he joins us now on KGO. Chris, hi. Thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Well, good morning, Pat, and thank you so much for helping us to get the word out about this phenomenal project. It's huge and amazing.
I'm so sorry that I did not know about this before. It's the World March. Explain to us, first of all, just what that is.
Well, it's literally global. It's an amazing project which is going to be taking place in almost 100 countries around the world over the course of 3 months from now. It actually was launched on October 2nd. In various places around the world, over 300 places had launching events for this march.
Wow.
And over the next 3 months, it's going to cover all of that territory. There's a core team of marchers that are going to make literally the journey, the 99,000-mile journey from New Zealand all the way across the planet and ending in the Andes Mountains of Argentina in January 2nd, 2010. And at the same time, in all of those places, there's going to be this enormous variety of concerts and marches and festivals and projects and schools, every different type of variety of project, all of which is with the goal of raising awareness about the urgent need for peace and nonviolence, particularly the need to abolish nuclear weapons and to build a whole new world based on the principles of nonviolence, that this is the way out for the future, nonviolence.
Is this a movement, a pacifist movement?
Well, it's beyond pacifism in the sense that pacifism usually refers to an anti-war stance, and certainly this is anti-war, but it goes beyond that in the sense of it's nonviolence in the sense of Gandhi, for example, who used nonviolent protest as a way to call attention to the injustice of society and to change those things through nonviolent action. So it's a broader vision than pacifism, and I think one that fits more with the needs of the world. Today, certainly war is a terrible disaster, and that's something that we want to overcome. But nonviolence, I think, is a point of view that tries to see, well, what are the causes, what are the root causes of wars? What are the other types of violence that exist in society, economic violence, racial violence, religious violence, violence against women, which contribute to the conditions that lead to the wars and physical conflict?
How did this thing come to be? How was this developed?
Yeah, well, this is a project of an organization called World Without Wars. World Without Wars is an organization that came out of the humanist movement, which is an international grassroots, all-volunteer movement which has been working for decades for nonviolence and human rights. And World Without Wars is based in Spain but has chapters in other countries. And they launched the idea a little over a year ago, I think, officially. And it, originally, you know, the idea was that this was a kind of a crazy project, you know. And as the founder of the march said, it converted over time into from a wild idea, a dream, to a possibility, and finally to a certainty. And what's happened is that over the course of the last half a year or year or so that this thing has been organized, an enormous number of other groups and people all over the world have responded to this idea, which is something which seems to be tremendously inspiring, and also something which is very much needed. And so, you know, we've had great support from international organizations like Mayors for Peace, Amnesty International in certain places, the Red Cross in other countries, a coalition called Abolition 2000, and also from thousands, literally, of organizations more at the grassroots level, community organizations, organizations in cities, cultural organizations, organizations that are linked to certain groups within a place. And those organizations are taking this as an opportunity to express their culture, but also to express this call for peace. And that's the thing that's really extraordinary about the march, is that it seems to be bringing together people of all faiths, of all cultures, all religions, all generations, all levels of society. It's been endorsed by acting presidents. Eight acting presidents have endorsed the march, as well as previous presidents like Jimmy Carter, many Nobel Peace Prize winners, the Dalai Lama, Rigoberta Menchú, Bishop Desmond Tutu, many others, and also artists and actors like Penelope Cruz and Lou Reed, and very well-known people like Noam Chomsky. So it's gained an enormous support at that level, but also at the grassroots level, a tremendous support. And it seems to be bringing together an enormous variety of the world in a way that, to me, it shows that this is a human call. It's not a call coming from any particular culture or any particular region. It's a call of humanity for a new world.
Well, let me talk to you about the march itself. There's a symbolic 93-day march. And there's a team of only 25 marchers, and you said that this begins in New Zealand. Why,
that's right.
Why just 25 when this is this huge international thing? Why wouldn't you have a million people marching?
Well, hopefully there will be a million people in various stops along the way. What we wanted to do was to rather than doing something sort of cumulative in that sense, like, you know, the Salt March, people adding themselves, to have a sort of symbolic thread that ties it together. And, you know, even that is an enormous logistical challenge and an enormous challenge for those marchers to go for 93 days. They're in many cases going to be in a different country almost every day. That's a symbolic thread, and it's a way to tie it together. But at the same time, what we wanted was to really activate things in the various places around the world, and to have that action be simultaneous. You know, so people will be doing in the U.S., for example, we're aiming to have things in all 50 states. And we are, at this point, already well past the halfway mark in terms of having people organizing things for the march in states in the U.S. In New York, the goal is to have a project of the march on each of the 93 days of the march. And since we're aiming for this to be really something about raising awareness, we wanted to have as much going on as possible. And this seemed to be the best way with the two, this kind of a dual structure of the symbolic march, and at the same time, all of these activities that are more local in a sense.
And who are the 25 marchers? Are they part of some group?
They are. Some are part of the humanist movement, but many are not. I think the majority are not. They are people who responded to this idea, people who were able to do it because there's not, corporate support for this. They're having to figure out on their own how to fund their trip and, of course, to take the time off. So they are an international team of people, and also they have various types of specializations, like a few of them are journalists, so they're going to be helping along the way, of course, to spread the word and let the media know, which is a very important part of this, you know. And thank you very much for helping us to spread the word, because this is the whole idea is letting people know, and letting people know about things like the urgent danger of nuclear weapons, which I'd like to talk about later. But you know, also in the base team, there's there are doctors, and there are people that are very good with the internet and spreading the word that way. So they were looking for, you know, a team of people that had various types of skills that would really help to do this, and also something international.
Okay. Tell you what, I'm going to take a break, and we will come back and continue our discussion. Chris Wells is my guest, and I'm Pat Thurston. You're listening to KGO News Talk A10.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Good
morning. I'm Pat Thurston. My guest is Chris Wells, and we're talking about the World March, which I am absolutely fascinated by. And Chris, again, I'm so delighted that you're joining us today. Tell us this. Why now? Why was this such a great idea at this point in time? Are we in a particularly dangerous place today?
Yes, I think we are. And I think, in a way, the most striking example of that danger is the threat of nuclear weapons, and this is one which is really not very well known. Many people associate the nuclear threat with the Cold War, and have the idea that it was something of the 80s. I remember talking here not so long ago with a young student here in New York who didn't even realize that the United States had nuclear weapons.
You're kidding.
No. This was at the time when we were very upset about the fact that North Korea had just done their first test. This was a couple of years back, and he believes, you know, in a way, kind of logically, that since we had such a problem with North Korea doing a test, that must mean that we didn't have weapons. And you know, in a way, that gives rise to the notion that, in order to solve the problem of nuclear weapons, we really need to have the goal of abolishing them altogether. It's not really logical to say, well, one country should have them but another can't. And this is a problem with dealing with the proliferation. But it's the thing is that the situation now with nuclear weapons is really more urgent than climate change. And climate change is something urgent, and I'm glad that people are aware of it. But one of the goals of the march is to raise awareness about nonviolence to the same degree that awareness has been raised about the environment.
Do you think at this point that not only do we have the proliferation of nuclear weapons, we don't have a Cold War like we had before, do you think we face a greater danger of nuclear weapons actually being launched, actually being used today?
Well, I think so. The problem today is that the situation is much more out of control. The proliferation of the weapons is much more out of control. Many of the weapons are out of control, and there's a number of scenarios that are very concerning. One is enormous tensions between nuclear states, such as Pakistan and India, for example. Another is the United States, not so much now. It's a little bit different climate under the Obama administration, but there were discussions of the United States perhaps using nuclear weapons tactically against Iran at a certain point. We also have the very serious issue of terrorism and of the possibility that a terrorist group could get a hold of a nuclear weapon. Raymond Kelly, the police commissioner in New York, recently was interviewed and was asked what he thought was the biggest threat in New York, and he said nuclear weapons. The other scenario, which is very concerning, is that many, many of these warheads, there are now tens of thousands of warheads in the world, and many of them are on what's called a hair trigger or automatic launch status. In other words, they are launched automatically by computers. If they pick up what the computer interprets to be an attack, and there's a very short window, a matter of minutes, for a human being to make the decision that that's not a real threat. So, there's a number of situations. One just could simply be an accident that could trigger an exchange of nuclear weapons. And, of course, even one weapon would be an unimaginable disaster. And if you start talking about more weapons, then we're talking about literally global, catastrophic effects on the climate.
Yeah, I did not realize that there's this hair trigger thing, that they could be launched automatically by computers.
Yes.
I thought this was a very complex procedure where some person in some bunker underground has a key and some other person has a key. I know I saw this in a James Bond movie somewhere. I'm sure this is true.
Well, there is that too, but there are a certain number of weapons which are on this what's called automatic launch status.
That's really scary. I mean, there's so many. Anybody who has a computer knows that there are lots of times your computer doesn't do what you expect your computer to do.
Exactly right, and that's what the world is now held hostage to, is the possibility of a computer error.
Well, and not only that, there are also the brilliant hackers who exist these days. They're more and more sophisticated all the time.
Yes.
How often are these systems revisited for the technology and the security and the protection that would be necessary to have such a thing attached to a nuclear weapon?
Yeah, it's a very good question, and I'm not an expert in those issues, but I think that there's many steps being taken now which are very positive. Obama, in Prague, he made a speech. He said that he called for the complete abolition of nuclear weapons. I think that's the only way to go. It's the only way that we're all going to be safe from this terrible threat. And really, it's something that could happen anywhere in the world. You know, it's a terrible sword of Damocles hanging over our heads. The other thing is that, you know, there are many steps that could be taken, very simple steps, such as simply taking the weapons off automatic launch status, which would make us enormously safer immediately. There is positive movement in this direction. And there is, I think, a growing awareness on the part of the leaders of the world that this is a very dangerous situation and something needs to be done. But we believe that, you know, that it needs a very strong push from the people of the world, that the people of the world need to become aware of this and they need to demand it of their leaders in order to make sure that it happens.
And we'll talk about some of that when we come back, because people are fearful and people believe that they need these weapons in order to protect themselves from all of the threats that exist out there. So you hang on with me, Chris. We'll talk about that when we come back. I'm Pat Thurston. You're listening. Oh, by the way, you can join us at 808-0810, 8080-810. Chris Wells is my guest. We're talking about the World March, and you're listening to KGO News Talk 810.
Talk about biting the hand that feeds. Sitting there watching as it bleeds. You can try your best in the winter light, when it really should be summer night. Is it too late, baby?
Good morning, I'm Pat Thurston. Chris Wells is my guest. Chris is the U.S. spokesman for the World March for Peace and Nonviolence. Right now we're talking about nuclear proliferation, nuclear weapons. And Chris, you know, a lot of people believe that the knowledge is out there. Once you know how to do these things, it's really, really tough to control them. You know, the genie's out of the bottle. How do you force the genie back into the bottle? And what you don't want is you don't want the other guy to have better weaponry than you have. How do you convince people in the world that nuclear weapons don't make them safer?
Well, it's true that the genie is out of the bottle and it's escaping even more all the time. And the only way to deal with the spread of nuclear weapons, I believe, is through real international cooperation, and that can only be done under the umbrella of a goal of reaching zero nuclear weapons. The fact that the United States has nuclear weapons is no deterrent, no protection against nuclear weapons being used by a terrorist group against us here. The old sort of logic of the balance of power of the Cold War made a certain bizarre sense, although I believe that, you know, nuclear weapons have always been immoral, deeply immoral. I mean, we're talking about weapons of mass destruction on a unimaginable scale. But, you know, then in that scenario, deterrence had a certain logic, although that Reagan and Gorbachev understood very well when they met in Reykjavik that you know, this was something that the world needed to leave behind. Now that logic doesn't apply at all because the situation is very chaotic. The nuclear technologies and fissile material are not very well controlled, and that can only be done with very, very strong international cooperation.
All right, I'll tell you what, I'm going to check in with the news department, find out what's going on in the news right now, and then we will continue our discussion. I want to stick with this issue right now of the nuclear proliferation, and then we'll get back to the march and what some of the events are and how people can get involved in all of that sort of thing.
Make the mountains ring, or make the angels cry.
Good morning. I'm Pat Thurston. We're talking about the World March for Peace and Nonviolence. Chris Wells is my guest, and Chris is the U.S. spokesman for the march. And Chris, before we get back to the march itself, I want to spend just a couple more minutes talking about nuclear weaponry. My understanding is that, you know, a lot of us have seen footage. We've seen film. We've watched documentaries about the horrific atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But my understanding is that nuclear weapons today are very, very different from those, that they are 1,000 times more powerful. Is that true?
Well, there are different strengths, different megatons. But yes, in general, they are much, much more powerful, 100 times more. Many times you have more than one warhead on a missile, and the destructive capacity is far beyond what we saw from those weapons. And of course, you know, altogether, the weapons that exist on the planet are enough to extinguish, you know, to make the human race extinct and destroy the planet completely.
And it's
an absurd existential threat to all of us.
And it seemed that for a period of time, immediately, I guess, after, tearing down that wall, Mr. Gorbachev, it seemed like the pursuit for nuclear weaponry, we didn't hear about that all the time. But now, you know, you mentioned North Korea, Iran, what's going on in Iran. I was just looking up at the news screen when we were at the break, and it said the IAEA is saying that Iran definitely has the knowledge to construct a nuclear weapon. I mean, this looks like this is like here and with us right now, and really, really scary that more nations are becoming nuclear powers rather than diminishing the number of nuclear weapons we have.
Yes, exactly. That's the direction that it's taking, because the states, believe that that's a way that they can defend themselves. As you said, many people think that, you know, that's the best way to defend yourself is by having that weapon. But if you look at the larger picture, what you see is that leads to more and more and more proliferation. And in fact, everyone in the world becomes less and less and less safe. So what we're saying is that the process has to go in the other direction, that the world is working all together to reduce nuclear weapons proportionally. We're not saying that any, you know, one state should disarm unilaterally, but it's beginning, I think, as makes sense with discussions between the United States and Russia, since they have by far the largest stockpiles of nuclear weapons, and that they begin with reductions there and then bring other countries into the process. And this is something, of course, which the UN is supporting very strongly, has called for. And in fact, Miguel de Scotto, who's the president of the General Assembly of the United States, has the United Nations, has very strongly supported the World March, in part because of its call for this abolition of nuclear weapons, and he referred to it as a new paradigm for the 21st century.
Have the nukes in Russia all now been accounted for? Wasn't there a period of time when they didn't know where all of them were?
I don't know the answer to that question, but you're right that there was a time when, you know, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, there was some concern about some of the weapons, they had lost track of them. This is something of deep concern, of course. You know, the other thing I wanted to mention is that the march has actually five things that it's calling for. One of them is the abolition of nuclear weapons. The second is the withdrawal of troops from occupied territories. The third is reduction of conventional military spending, and the redirection of those resources to addressing the urgent needs of humanity. You know, last year the world spent almost $1.5 trillion on weapons, and at the same time there's an enormous, you know, one in every sixth person on the planet is hungry. So that's a terrible, crazy, unjust situation. The last two things that the march are calling for is that countries sign non-aggression treaties, and that they renounce the use of war as a means of resolving conflicts. So this is kind of a package of ideas which are all aimed in the direction of reducing tension, taking the emphasis off the use of military force to resolve conflicts between countries, and lowering the tension and directing the energies and the resources of the world towards addressing the urgent needs that people have. And I believe that that, in the long run, is by far the best way to guarantee everyone's security, as well as building a more just and a more human world. You know, we believe that everybody in the world ought to have the same opportunity in life, no matter where they're born, what circumstances. And
now, do you believe that the march is actually going to accomplish these things? Is it going to raise greater awareness around the world? And do you think maybe this is going to be the first of many marches, maybe happening on an annual basis as awareness grows and participation in the marches grows, and eventually this kind of a grassroots movement will be what governments have to respond to?
That is exactly the idea. You know, the Rafael de la Rubia, who's the person who launched the idea of the march, the founder of World Without Wars, gave a wonderful, very powerful talk in Wellington on October 2nd when they launched the march, in which he said this is a march with no return, meaning that this march continues until we've achieved a world without war and without nuclear weapons.
Well, it doesn't mean you don't go home, does it?
Well, we'll probably have to take little breaks just to feed ourselves and rest a little bit. But, you know, that is the idea, is that this is really something coming from all of humanity, from the vast majority of humanity that wants peace, that's tired of violence, tired of war, tired of injustice. It's something that, you know, the world has the capacity.
Right.
We have the technology, we have the resources,
right,
to make sure that every single child born on this planet has enough to eat, has a good place to live, has access to education. And what we need to change is the systems in the world that distribute wealth and that address those problems, so that, you know, there's progress for everyone. That's really the road to security.
It really is frustrating to think that there is as much, that we have as much, that we are as rich as we are, and that our resources go toward destruction rather than saving lives and going to humanitarian purposes. It's really frightening.
It's very frustrating. The United States is the largest exporter of weapons in the world.
Yeah.
And also, of course, by far the largest military spending.
And sometimes we play both sides.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think about that from a moral perspective, imagine if the United States, you know, if we had a lot of companies, big business in the business of exporting drugs, you know, for example. We would say, well, that's immoral, you know, that's unacceptable. And yet it's considered to be acceptable to export, you know, things that maim and kill people.
Well, you're talking about illicit drugs, right? Because I'm thinking big pharma.
Yes, that's
and
right.
Charge an arm and a leg for them.
Yes, exactly.
All right. You know, I have to take another break, Chris, so hang on with me and we will continue our discussion. I do want to get to what people can do to participate and what's actually going to be happening in our area. I know there are things that are going to be happening even in San Francisco. 808-0810 is our telephone number. I'm Pat Thurston, and you're listening to KGO News Talk 810.
KGO News Talk 810.
Good morning, I'm Pat Thurston. We are talking about the World March for Peace and Nonviolence. I hope I got that name right because I set it aside here. And Chris Wells is my guest. He is the U.S. spokesperson. Chris, before we get to what's going on in the Bay Area and how people can participate, let's get a call from our listener here. We've got Nicholas calling from San Francisco. Nicholas, hi, you're on with Chris Wells.
You know, I want to say that Albert Einstein was right when he said that the world is a very, very dangerous place. And it's dangerous not because of the people who are evil, but because of the people who let it happen. So right now, you know, $3 billion a day is spent on weapons in the world a day. During that same time, 160,000 people starve a day in the world.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty startling, Nicholas.
That adds up to millions of people starve. Millions.
Unnecessarily.
It's unnecessary, and it's crazy. It's really, from a certain point of view, a kind of insane state of affairs. And as you say, this one of the great principles of nonviolence is that, you know, the status quo, the system, as some people call it, is maintained by the cooperation of the majority of people. And so when the march talks about raising awareness, what we're talking about is activating an awareness in the majority of people in the world who disagree with that state of affairs, and yet that's not being expressed. It's not being expressed in an organized social way. It's not being expressed politically. And so that's a great goal of the march. The march is really expressing democracy in its truest form, which is that the will of the people be expressed. And there's a vast majority of people. I believe the vast majority of people on the planet don't agree with that injustice that you just put your finger on. They want a different world, and I think what the march aspires to be is a vessel for that to express itself and for that to coalesce into something that becomes a social force.
And it's a march that is covering 6 continents and 93 days, is that right?
That's right. 6 continents, 93 days, almost 100 countries, more than 300 cities. Just on October 2nd, there were events in more than 300 cities around the world. Some of them were enormous. In Santiago, Chile, there were thousands of people marching in Milan and the Plaza of the Duomo. There were about 7,000 people gathered to launch this march, and there were also events in Peru, in Kilkenny, Ireland, in Kenya, in rural Kenya, a beautiful march. And what was very emotional for the people who've been working on this for over a year now, some of them 2 years, was to feel this connection with the whole world. As we, in each of our places, did our events, we had a couple of beautiful ones here in New York. We started with an interfaith blessing ceremony right down on the Hudson River with representatives of a huge, rich variety of the world's religions, Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Sikh, all giving their blessings to the march, all from the point of view of their rich cultural and religious traditions, blessing this initiative. And what you could see there was this deep thing that is held in common among so many people in the world, so many religions, and that is a longing for peace and a dream, an aspiration of a world where these things don't happen, where people don't starve to death, where everyone has the same chance in life. So
where life is really respected.
Where life is respected, exactly, each life. That's the meaning of humanism to me.
Yeah.
That each human life is something unique and to be respected and to be nurtured. Yeah.
Chris, I've got to take one more break, and I promise when we come back, we're going to talk with people and explain to them what they can do to get involved in the World March. I'm Pat Thurston. Stick with us. You're listening to KGO News Talk A10. Good morning, I'm Pat Thurston, and I'm talking with Chris Wells. We are talking about the World March for Peace and Nonviolence. And Chris, we don't have a lot of time left. Do tell our listeners what they can do to get involved.
Okay, the best way to get involved is to go to the website, worldmarchusa.net, worldmarchusa.net. There you can see information about everything that's happening here in the U.S. and also connects with the international website, so you can see what's going on there. You can follow a blog of the base team reporting on their adventures as they travel across the planet. Also there you can endorse the march. You can endorse the five principles of the march, and there you can see how you can become involved, because there are things happening in I don't know, maybe between 20 and 30 states in the U.S. During these next 3 months. And the thing that's really amazing about the march is that it's open to initiatives. It's not one size fits all, but rather any group, any individual, any organization that wants to participate in the march can develop their own project. There are also lots of ideas for projects that are circulating. For example, nonviolence curriculums in schools. There's been quite a lot of work done on that, and some wonderful curriculums have been developed for different age levels in schools to teach kids about nonviolence. And this is part of the project that part of the projects that are being done through the march.
And the marching team is going to become to San Francisco.
They are coming to San Francisco. They come to the United States on November 30th. They arrive to New York from North Africa on November 30th. They'll be in New York until the evening of December 1st, and then travel to different places in the U.S., one of which is San Francisco, and the main day is going to be December 2nd in San Francisco and also in L.A., and in Washington, D.C. And on that day, there's going to be an all-day Assembly for Peace in Marin County. People can get more details about that as the time approaches. And I know also that there's going to be many things happening before then. And the best way to plug in and get involved is through the website. There's lots of information there, and also contact information. You can contact any of the coordinators for the country, for the state, to have questions answered. And
Chris,
we're looking to encourage as much participation as possible.
And we are completely out of time, but I thank you for joining us today, Chris Wells.
Thank you, and Pat.
You betcha. And I am Pat Thurston. You're listening to KGO San Francisco, San Jose, Oakland. Brent Walters coming up next with God Talk.